Hey everyone, welcome to our second edition of the Mashing In podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stefan Turcotte. Beside me is...
Brian Teslin.
And Edward K.
Yeah, so thanks for tuning in again, and thanks for sticking with us. We know the first episode wasn't as tiddled up, as Ed would say, as we would like. But
making improvements.
Yeah, but we will slowly climb... the mountain to perfection and get there one day.
You gotta start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we started rock bottom.
Yeah. So.
But we appreciate everyone who's reached out and complimented or given us some criticism or critiques on the podcast.
Oh, you got critiques?
I got, well, not critiques, but just some, like, you know, they said they listened to it, and I think we've had a few people reach out, you know, give us a couple of tips and critiques, and, you know.
Because I only had glowing reviews.
Glowing
yeah,
reviews?
Yeah, glowing.
You're just used to everything glowing for, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the way I like it.
Yeah.
I glow in the dark.
It's true. We don't need the lights on in here.
No. So we usually start off the week. Last week was a bit of an anomaly because it was our first ever, so we introduced ourselves a little bit. This week, though, what we will normally do in this first segment is kind of tell about anything beer-related or even, you know, life-related that happened this week and, like, some events that are coming up over the next couple weeks. So, Brian, I think you've got a couple of events that you wanted to mention coming up.
In town, there's a few happening takeovers over at Smith's Pub, just on Courtney Street, between Blanchard and Douglas. And they're having tomorrow night, that's January 30th, they're having a Backcountry Brewing tap takeover. The lineup looks pretty cool. Backcountry is a pretty top of the game brand right now.
I've liked everything I've had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pushing a bit more into making more complex sours. They've got fun branding, but they've also got a unique branding to them as well. Something that's a bit more catchy and easy to find in the stores. So. Check that out if you can. I believe it starts around 5 or 6. At least that's when probably their reps get there.
I worry for them, though, because they keep giving their beer names, like, joke names and, like, Seinfeld references.
They're going the pop culture route.
No, I just worry that, like, they're going to start to run out of jokes.
Well, did you see the new one that came out now? It's a strawberry sour.
Yeah.
And it's called Pump Up the Jams.
Okay.
So they're really tugging to, like, that 90s and 80s and, like, early 2000s heartstrings for nostalgia, which is, you know, it's not a bad thing. There's a lot of people in there that are into that and can relate. So it's kind of fun, but now I think they might be putting themselves into a certain category.
That's fine. It's fun. But I think that's a great thing to go down for. Anything else coming up?
Yeah, we've got an event at the Drake coming up on Saturday. It's a local launch for Blackberry Farms,
mm-hmm.
who are from somewhere in the States.
I think,
Tennessee, what is it?
Yeah, I think they're Tennessee.
Yeah. I believe so.
They do a lot of saisons. They're like saisons and barrel aged beers, and they had one of their saisons on at the sour event they did the first week of
the classic saison. It's really good.
It was like dry and it was pretty rustic, not aggressively fruity. A lot of people were like, I'm not too sure about this beer. And I was like, this is pretty dynamite. So
cool.
Yeah. And then what else have we got coming up here?
We're going to be getting into a Victoria Beer Week in a month or so.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, that's
and I think they're going to be announcing, I guess I can start to plug it, but I'm going to be doing a couple of beer school events here at Il Sauvage Brewing. I'm going to be doing, I think, an intro to Cicerone class with about 20 people, but I can give more info over the next couple weeks. And we're also going to be doing my friend Bobby Wood, who's also an advanced Cicerone out of Seattle, Washington. He's going to come up and we're going to teach a class together on beer and food here as well. And I think we're also going to be doing a sour event here on the Thursday.
Oh, great.
More info to come. And there's a beer quiz that week, too, which I can't wait for, because last last year we did pretty well, the three of us, I think.
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah.
Pretty well.
That brewery event is happening.
Won the year before. Yes, yeah, there's a brewery event at John B. Neighborhood Pub coming up as well.
That's
on the 2nd.
The brewery from Placentia. Yeah.
Oh, it's not just a general brewery.
Not
a
general brewery. No, it's B-R-U-E.
Yeah. It was just brewery. Blank Brewing Company.
Yeah, Blank Brewing Company. Okay, yeah. So the brewery. So lots of wild, lots of Berliner Weisses, lots of barrel-aged sours. Kind of the company that sort of was heading it up about 10 years ago and really starting that whole buy into the futures program and buy into the club programs, and a lot of what we're seeing right now that a lot of people are doing is where they kind of started a lot of that. So if you're in Burnaby, it's Burnaby in Vancouver, check them out. That event will be a lot of fun, and there's a lot of great beers. I saw the list the other day and there's some pretty nice stuff. Stouts, sours, wild ales.
Nice.
Sounds good. I think that about wraps up our weekly event segment. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back with some beer news.
Hey everyone, we're going to jump into the beer news now. Opening up with a story that you've probably seen shit out around Facebook if you're into craft beer. So a brewery called Atlas Beer Works in Washington, D.C. has, if you follow the news at all, you'll know that the Donald Trump has shut down the U.S. government.
Oh, it's now back open.
Mm-hmm. Is it open again?
Yes. He made a deal, yeah.
Well, no deal, just same deal.
Well,
yes. Yeah.
There you go. Well, and the TTB, or the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax Trade Bureau, has not been operating for all this time, so they've not been approving new beers. So this brewery, it's sitting on like 5 beers apparently. They're claiming like 40 barrels of beer. Cans have been approved, but not like SKUs for kegs. They can't ship them outside of Washington, D.C. So they've decided to sue the government. They're claiming damages of like $5,000 if they can't sell these 40 barrels. But if they meet their 100, or if they met their 100 barrel target, it'd be up to $15,000. So they decided to sue the government for this money, which is just... good luck, right? I hear they got pretty good lawyers.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with this one, because you're, like, you're sitting on 5 new beers. Like, how many seasonals do you have going? Do you have core beers at all? Like, or is it just full-on seasonals all the time?
I don't know. It sounds like a PR stunt to me.
Yeah.
Just because, right? Like, what are the lawyer fees
to
sue the government for $5,000 to $15,000, right?
It's probably the whole thing of the government looking for publicity by shutting down the government, and now someone's like, well, I'm going to try and capitalize on that for my business.
It's not like TTB didn't want to be working. All these people want to have a salary. They want to be working. If you're going to sue anyone, you should be suing Donald Trump, really, right?
Yeah.
But he's now the government, isn't he? I think that's the whole point. He's now the, he's no, the well, one that, he's the government. That's why they're suing the government.
He is, but...
Well, he is.
But, yeah, it's kind of like one of those things, like, I kind of get it, because there's a lot of breweries sitting on beer, but there's got to be, like, it ties back into the whole flagship February thing. Like, all these breweries just making, like, 5 beers continuously, almost, like, the rotating skew, they're probably like, doesn't affect us, but people just making constant seasonals,
yeah.
It's going to screw them so hard. But if they're reopening, that's obviously going to help with that, because... these guys were kind of screwed.
The only thing is that the TTB is going to have a stack of papers 5 inches high on their desk when they get into work. And
massive backlog.
Yeah, so it might take a little while for it to sort itself out.
Yeah. No,
I think it's, and we'll touch base on this when I get to my article, but it's where the industry's going, because everyone's trying to figure out a way of getting their name of their brewery into something, you know, getting some relevance.
And that was successful. We're talking
about
what breweries
are. Atlas Beer Works.
Okay. We are.
I've only heard like little inklings of them. I've never really heard much to any of their products, you know, thinking. And they're out of Seattle too, right? You said?
No,
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's right. So their lawyer's already there. So yeah. They're not flying them out.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely a, yeah. It sounds like a political stunt for the hill to
Well, think about it. If you were a like craft beer lover in Washington, D.C., and you were a Donald Trump hater, I'm sure there's a couple of them somewhere.
One or two, probably, yeah.
You'd probably be like, hell yeah, let's go down to that brewery for a drink and help them, right?
Yeah.
So I think it'll probably work itself out for them.
It's tugging at the heartstrings of people wanting to support the little guy.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know if they're a family business or not, but that's what they're using that as. So. Okay.
Apparently their IPA is perishable within 120 days. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of US beers that are over 120 mm-hmm. days old here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
Okay, let's move on to the second article. Brian, I believe you brought one in, so
let us know what it is. This is kind of building on an article we talked about last week.
Which one?
It was one I brought. It was talking about how craft beer is changing and dove into a lot of the, a lot of what Ed said, five new beers a week. There's, you know, they're getting... The identities of breweries are getting taken away, and that whole point of a flagship beer is dying out. And I got home last week, and it was up late, and I saw this article posted by a really good friend of mine who's an awesome beer person in the industry. And he just wanted to post it to say it's a great read. It's sort of touching on that whole thing. And it's called Is Craft Beer Burning Out? By, we're reading... It's just a WordPress article by the Burnt Out Beer guy, and...
Oh, so his blog is Burnt Out Beer?
I guess so, yeah.
And he writes articles.
So, when I read this article, and I was like, and people were starting to, like, share it on Facebook, I thought, you know, this is interesting, I'm gonna really see what he has to say, and, like, it just starts out, you know, IPA is so cloudy, they look like radioactive pond water, double mocha, woka, choco, vanilla, fudgy, wudgy, pastry stouts... DDH fruit smoothies, that's double dry hop for the uninitiated, and salty gozes that taste like gym instructor sweat. That was sort of what he led into. He goes on to talk about how the previous article that was out the week before talked about how Yeppe from Evil Twin got all teary-eyed because he was sad that he had to make five new beers every week in order to stay prevalent. It goes on and talks about a lot of things. I was really kind of going back to the whole flagship February thing. It just sounds, and going back to Ed's article, it sounds like people are just going to do anything now to kind of get prevalence in the industry is what I kind of grab from that. And I think the beer industry kind of did this to themselves in a way. People make great beer all the time. And if you stick to your guns on making great beer... You don't really have to worry about having that new beer out. It's just like a restaurant. If you make good food, you can still make good food for 20 years as a restaurant. People will still always come back and eat that. But if you just try and do all these new wacky things to impress a few new people coming into your industry, it's not really going to take off. And this article sounded a lot like an older person getting mad at the new young crowd for... You know, wanting the new hip thing to happen when breweries aren't really in that tailspin. People like Driftwood, they are making solid core beers every day and selling like crazy all across the country. Mm-hmm. But this is also bashing the people who want to be innovative and have a different model than that. So you look at breweries like Twin Sails, who do put out that all the time, and creativity is their weapon. And they shouldn't be brought down for that. They should be encouraged. If that's what they want to do, then that's what they should do. And then we look at breweries like Superflux, who everyone thinks that's all they do is put out new beers, but they don't. All their beers are core beers. They're just hazy IPAs. And then they put out a stout here and there. And so I think people think just because there's a new beer coming out every 5 minutes, they don't realize that a lot of these beers have been out before. And a lot of these beers are, you know, things that breweries are focusing on.
Yeah, I have a couple things, like, responses as well. Like, first of all, isn't there room in craft beer for both those things? Like, in my mind, there's room for Chuckanut, a brewery close to Bellingham making amazing lagers. So there's room for them. And there's room for... Aslan in the same or structures in the same town, like there's people that want that. If you and people like you and I, like us three, when we go to Bellingham, I want to go to both those places.
Yeah.
I want to go to Chuckanut and I want to have some solid lagers, exactly. And then I want to go to structures and drink some killer barrel aged stouts and hazy IPAs. Like I want, so I don't think there's it's burning out because there's room for all of this. And the second thing is it seems to me like kind of like analogous to music, where new music comes along and people are like, oh man, like this is garbage. Like when I was younger, like, you know, musicians had to play their instruments until their fingers bled, and you know, like, and no, there's now room in music for everything. Like grunge is still a genre in music. Maybe it's not done as often as it was in the early 90s, but it still exists as a thing, and there's still bands playing that kind of, like Kings of Leon or whatever, still kind of play that kind of music. So yeah, I hate these kind of like old man shaking their fist at the wind type thing.
That's what I got from the circle.
And yeah.
There's just, I've seen so many of these articles. There's one that's called Crap Beer is Dead. And that's why Superflux, I think, had a beer called that.
I remember that. There's barcodes all over.
The American Pale Ale, whatever it was.
Yeah.
No, it was an American style, like a West Coast style IPA. From like late 90s.
It had called like, it an APA or something like that.
But it had like a malt character in an IPA. So
huge,
it was like,
it was not even that hazy either. It was almost
No, it was crystal clear and like an amber color. Like an IPA you would have seen in like 2001.
Yeah.
It's just one of those clickbait things. You see going around Facebook like, shave your beard off, you fucking hipster. They're not cool anymore. Like, that's not why I have a beard. Like, if you don't like beards, that's your fucking problem.
So why do you have a beard?
My girlfriend likes it.
Good reason. See, there's room.
I would say keep that. Yes. Yeah, and that's what I was kind of going for with this article, was I keep hearing all these people backlashing, and I would admit that I maybe had a few comments about it previously, and really reading in depth of this and talking to a few other people who run craft beer bars and breweries in this town, it's not that. The industry is thriving, and it will continue to thrive, and the breweries who are thinking that they have to make a new beer every day that made good beer in the past will right themselves eventually, and you basically just need to make good beer. Just focus on doing that, and you'll sell more, and that's right for any business you do, no matter what. You make a good product, you stick with that.
Okay. Our third news story of the week comes from me. This is news out of your homeland, Ed. I'm sure you shed a tear or two when the news came out, but it really shocked me when I saw it. So I just wanted to share it quickly. There's not that much to comment on. But this week, Fuller's sold their entire part of their beer business to Tokyo-based Asahi for £250 million,
Does that translate to Canadian or at least American?
I'm gonna say $4 million.
400 mil.
Oh, nice.
It's around $400 million, something like that. Yeah. So this is kind of crazy because Fuller's has been making beer since the 1600s on the banks of the Thames, and they make a London Porter, and London Pride is like, you know, one of the best-selling ales in the UK.
Their Imperial Stout's legendary too.
They make a lot of amazing beer still, and even like with craft beer, they're still like, I would still consider them craft beer. Like until this sale, obviously.
Yeah.
And so it's just really kind of shocking because they are, this London institution of like, I've heard stories about their yeast that they've had some of their yeast strains going for like 200 years.
Whoa. I can imagine, It's like San Francisco sourdough.
And so some of these yeast that they use are also really famous. So it seems a little bit sad. Like, I'm curious what you guys think. Like, what is Asahi even doing here? Like, what do they have planned for Fuller's?
It's a weird one as well, because it's not like a hip, cool new brewery or something. It's like,
but
this is dad's beer.
But it sells. It's in most stores. It does volume. It's a name that knows well, so it's probably a really smart business decision. Maybe the people from Fuller's, I don't know if it touched in the article, maybe they're getting...
So the reason that they said it's a family-run business and it still has three families are the ones who did up until now controlled it. They said they wanted to move just to focusing on their pubs and hotels. They've got like almost, what did it say here? I think it was almost 200 hotels and 180 pubs. around the UK. So they, I think they just want to focus on this, and this was, you know,
the system's already set up. I mean, the infrastructure's there, so Asahi just comes in and just offer distribution and stuff like that.
But as if we look at like some of the other sales, this one seems like more just like a little bit different, because the other sales, they're buying more hipper brands.
Yeah, like the Beaverton.
Yeah, and or in the States, like Wicked Weed, like they bought like one of the
Did
hipper
Asahi
brands.
Buy them?
No. I'm just saying,
about the, about the conglomerates on a whole.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it does make Asahi one of the largest like brewing companies in the world now. I think number 6 or 7.
Wow.
So, yeah. Even in spite of some of the other big ones. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It says here that they had bought a couple of other breweries over the last like 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. So, I just thought that was interesting, because now, I don't know, like, are English people going to still turn out to the brewery?
I don't think most of them care, to be honest. Yeah, okay. 100%.
Well, here's a question for you. Let's do it in our hometown. Let's say, what if Phillips bought Driftwood? Do you think people would still drink Driftwood?
What if Heineken bought Phillips? People still drink Phillips?
Yep.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
You think people would still drink Phillips?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
If it wasn't advertised
as
much? Sadly. Yeah.
Not everyone, but your
average still,
person.
Yeah, I think. And I
still
think,
pick up a Blue Buck whenever you saw it.
It's, that's what beer is, though. It's a go-to something for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I guess with these types of brands, like, these are mostly bought by like mass consumers, like grocery stores or things like that. So, yeah, they're not like us. They don't care.
Yeah.
No, we're still a very small community.
Yeah. And showing that we do care, we have some beer tasting coming up.
Oh,
with some delicious German Pilsners, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. Okay, welcome back. We're going to get into a segment I'm now dubbing Three Beers.
Okay.
Are you guys cool with that?
Three beers.
Essentially, the premise is that every week we pick a theme. We each bring in a beer, therefore three beers. Open them, taste them, drink them, and tell ourselves and yourselves what we think of them. So last week we picked an ingredient for beer. It was corn. This week we decided on a style instead, and we picked German Pilsner. So not just Pilsner, because there are a couple different kinds of Pilsner. There's a Czech Pilsner, and there's like, and then the other big one is the German Pilsner. Mm-hmm. So German Pilsner is probably my favorite too, if we're going to talk about like lagers in general. Mm-hmm. You guys, if you had to pick a lager to drink for the rest of your life, what would you pick?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a Bock fan. I like darker stuff, so I usually gravitate towards a little bit more darker malt in my...
Like a Maibock or like a bigger one?
Maibock.
Like Doppelbock?
Doppelbocks are great, but if I was going to go for like a lager for the rest of my life, I'd like...
Technically a Baltic Porter is a lager, right?
Usually, yeah.
I'm going for Baltic
Porter. Okay. And I would go for German Pils, because German Pils are fairly bitter. Mm-hmm. They're like, they've got a minerality to them, and they're fairly hoppy as far as lagers go. So
that's true. I despise lagers for the longest time, and Pilsners by extension, but some of the German ones I've tried, like locally especially, the simple things one.
So what defines it as a Czech Pilsner then? Is it more of a crisp?
No, so this is where a lot of people get it wrong. So I've got in front of us right now the BJCP, which is the Beer Judge Certification Program's 2015 style guidelines. I know that like a lot of people, like I've heard people say this to me before, because I'm, you know, a Cicerone and part of the program. Some people just hate the idea of this. They hate the idea of like codifying beer and beer styles. I'm just like, oh man, like when we want to have a conversation about beer, it's very nice to start from a known thing. If you want to make a double dry hopped German Pils, at least I know what the German Pils is going to taste like first before you start adding in the hops in, right? So this is a nice place to start. It also has a lot of like nice little tidbits from brewing history in it. Maybe not like deep enough for the history nerds, but they're not perfect.
there are, this is where it's getting convoluted with a lot of the newer styles that are coming in.
Yes.
There's basis to, like, for brewed IPAs is probably the biggest example right now.
Or milkshake IPAs, I'd say, yeah.
It's like, well, who made it first, and did they do a good job, or what's the deal with it, right? So brewed IPAs, I think, is my best one, is because really we keep trying a bunch of brewed IPAs, and we're like, we really don't know what this is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So, so a little bit of background about German Pilsner. So lagers originated in Germany, but Pilsen is a town in the Czech Republic. And the story goes that the town was like trying to build a new brewery for the citizens. Like the citizens all chipped in and wanted to build a new brewery. They hired a brewmaster. The head of the project decided to go to Germany to get a brewmaster to bring his yeast to make sure that they were, you know, because Bavaria and Germany had become famous for these lager types. And so he brought them back to Pilsen in the Czech Republic, and it just was one of these like happy accidents of like everything coming together. So in Pilsen, the water is, you know, mountain fed and like there's nothing in it. It's like amazingly pure water. There's the new advent of pale malts that had just been developed. And then also the noble hop varieties that are famous from the Czech Republic and Germany. So, and then plus the lager yeast, that clean malt accentuating lager yeast. So those things came together, and then the Czech Republic became famous for this style called, and especially Pilsen became famous for this style called Pilsner. Unfortunately, they never patented it. And so word got out. People were like talking about these amazing beers that came from Pilsner, and a lot of people started making their own versions of Pilsner. And it just so happens that the other most famous version is the German Pilsner. And it has a little bit of variation, like between Munich and Berlin. It tends to get drier and hoppier as you go north. That's the general trend. But in Germany, a lot of people just call it Pils. P-I-L-S, because as kind of like an homage to the originators. Because calling it Pilsner, it's almost like calling, they didn't protect it at the time, but it's almost like calling something champagne. Right? Like they are the ones who invented this. So the Germans, as the story goes, kind of use Pils as a way to like say thank you to them.
So really, you can only call it Pilsner if it's made in Czech Republic.
Because in Pilsen. No, because they didn't patent it or anything. And it turns out that like Pilsner, you see it on beer labels all over the world, on beers that have nothing. The only thing they have to do with Pilsner is lager yeast. They have nothing else to do with that style. So it has become a bastardized term, Pilsner. So the BJCP is just, you know, codifying this and saying, no, this is what a Czech Pilsner is, and this is what a German Pilsner is. So I'm just going to quickly go over before we open these three German style Pilsners, or Pils.
Pils.
Is that how you say it? Pils.
Yeah. I'm not from That's any of those regions.
Yeah. Drinking all this beer is sure making me
want so worldly. Pils. You're so worldly.
Thank you. I would like to speak German one day, though, because I feel like it's a good a language to get angry in.
Yes.
Right? Someone.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've worked with a lot of people from that region. And when they start talking, you just think they're always angry. Like, no, we were just talking about what we did last night. Yeah.
No, I was. My sister lived in Germany for a year, and I was there, and we were climbing some castle in Ulm. And there was like a German family in front of us, and we're hiking up. There was like 180 steps to the top of the tower or whatever. And the dad in front of us just sounded like Hitler. But he was just, you know, just being his normal German self. But it was a very aggressive anger.
Very forceful anger.
Yeah.
I spent 10 days through Germany and Czech and Prague. And, man, just the people there are freaking amazing. Like, so cool. But, listening to them talk in their natural language is great.
Okay, so vital statistics. So generally speaking, there are 22 to 40 IBUs. IBUs, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Yeah. It is a contentious thing. But because they're pale in color and dry, the IBUs should be pronounced. Like there should be a pronounced bitterness in them. SRM 2 to 5, they should be, you know, pale straw in color. The main overall, the overall impression should be a light-bodied, highly attenuated, gold-colored, bottom fermented bitter German beer showing excellent head retention and an elegant floral hop aroma. Crisp, clean, refreshing. A German pils showcases the finest quality German malt and hops. So, yeah, it sounds great, doesn't it?
Sounds based good on paper.
Yeah, it does sound really good. Yeah, and so, and just some of the classic ingredients in this style. So normally they use continental Pilsner malt. So Weyermann Pilsner malt would be one of the main ingredients usually. The hops should be German varieties, especially the noble hop varieties like Tettnanger and Hallertau. And obviously using German lager yeast. So one of the main things people get confused about is Czech Pils, German Pils. Czech Pils are definitely softer, lower in IBUs, and they're a little bit sweeter.
Right.
Okay, and most people think it's the opposite. They think of the Czech ones, but no, it's the also the water should be there should be a like a minerality to them as well. Okay. So that's what we're looking for.
Like an effervescence minerality, you mean?
Well, they should be highly carbonated, but there should also be like a slightly hard water minerality to them. Yeah. So Ed brought the first beer. What'd you bring us?
I believe it's pronounced Jever.
Correct.
A Pilsner. From Germany, spelled P-I-L-S-E-N-E-R.
There are two spellings, yeah.
And all it describes itself as is being, which says crisp bitterness, hoppy flavor, dry finish. Very to the point.
Okay, well, those all sound like things we just talked about.
This is also a value brand of beer throughout the
It'll be good to right have now. Like an actual German one to start, like to have a baseline of comparison.
Is there any packaging date? That's any
a
idea?
Good question. Once I finish pouring, I'll have a look under here. 07/02/2018. So just under a year old, but it's in a can. You know, some of the it comes in a green bottle too, which is probably going to be a bit more skunked.
With the travel, you know, and the everything, it just
smells pretty malty off the bat.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
What do they say in Germany? Prost?
Yes.
Okay.
More like Prost.
There you go. You're sounding
there you go.
A little bit more German.
I spent some time in Germany.
Wow, this has got a really nice firm bitterness to it.
It does,
right?
Yeah.
Like, it's crisp and light.
This is like... Like, after drinking all these hazies over the last little while, this is like... this is like West Coast IPA level. It's awesome.
It's definitely hoppy.
Yeah.
It's definitely got a pronounced bitterness. It's
not really in the aroma. I think probably the aroma has faded over time.
More of a malty aroma.
But lagers generally have like a malty aroma to them.
That little spicy. Not, I always call it spicy, but that like.
And,
almost like a rot. Yeah. I had it in like so many like really well made lagers down.
I would think though that spiciness would be coming from the hops.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them use Saz hops, which are known for being like herbal and like. I'm using air quotes right now, spicy, like not like spice, but like,
yeah. And so, no, I'm not talking about heat. I'm more like, I always relate to like a toasted weedy flavor and essence.
Kind of earthy, right?
Yep.
And there's definitely some herbal qualities going on there.
And I love like, I'm getting that minerality, like the bitterness has just got like this, minerality behind it that just lasts.
Mm.
Like the bitterness doesn't fade, like it sticks around for a good long time.
And this is not super cold either, and the bitterness is not too crazy. But like, usually you'd probably drink this a little bit.
How much was this can?
This was like $3 or something.
Yeah, it had to be. It's a tall boy too.
Yeah,
I swear, like if you just put like I don't know, like bright colors on a label, stuck it in a 4-pack, you charge $22.
Oh yeah,
people would buy it all the time.
I gotta say, once I read that bottle, that canning date, I was like, "Oh god, we're in for a rough ride." But seems to be faring pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a fairly mass-produced beer. I don't know exactly what they're doing to make sure that it's shelf-stable, but I assume it's pasteurized. And
I gotta admit, I bought it, didn't know what it was, and then I looked it up on the internet, and lots of the rate beer things were like, oh god, so skunked.
Yeah, but...
Because they're all bottled.
Yeah, that's
like,
why...
Oh, okay.
But it's one of those value brand beers you'll find at every store. I mean, even Cook Street was bringing it in for a long period of time because they couldn't get Dab, and... Is that where you got it?
This was from Cook Street Liquor.
Oh, okay. Dab, that's what the kids are doing.
That's what the kids are doing. Well, actually, dabbing's not cool anymore.
Oh, it's not?
I don't think so, I think dabbing is stuff that's... Because all the old people started doing it.
Yeah, but like, so my oldest daughter goes to elementary school, and when I picked her up the other day, there were kids dabbing in the playground.
Oh, really? Like really?
Yeah, I mean, like 8-year-olds.
Yeah, so yeah, for those little kids, I don't think it's a teenager thing though.
Okay.
Dabbing might be a different term for what teenagers are doing.
I'd love to have a fresher example closer to the source, but yeah. This is I think this is though if but what I just read off the BJCP, this is kind of hitting it, isn't don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Like it's crisp and clean, and it's definitely got lots of hop character to it, but it's bitter. It's not, I find, you know, lots of Czech ones that can be a bit sweeter.
Yeah.
But this is definitely what I would read as a traditional Pilsner.
It's a nice surprise. It's good.
Yeah.
German quality. That's what it says on the can.
Oh, and it does say that it abides by the purity law. So.
Oh, does it actually?
There you go.
Huh. That's four ingredients, right?
Yeah.
Well, interesting that still kind of...
I may buy this for having in my beer fridge, I think. As my go-to Pilsner.
Well, at $12 a 4-pack.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're not getting much cheaper than that.
Also, sorry, what are you at for ABV? 4.9 as well.
4.9.
Like, yeah, you just
noticed a bunch of them are around that ABV, the ones that we're going to try next.
Yeah.
Does it mention IBUs at all, or is it just, they're just like, whatever.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I think that's an American thing.
Yeah,
with
I think
IBUs
it's more
these
an American
days.
Thing.
I would
don't think
that
the Europeans care about that.
I would think though that this, would, like I said, usually between 22 and 40 for this style, and I think this is probably much closer to 40.
Oh, okay.
This is also a 500 ml can and not a 473 like our normal local ones.
Extra 30 mils going on.
Mm-hmm. Not quite.
Close. Come on, I'm rounding up.
Yeah.
Wow. But I don't know about you guys, but I had trouble finding a lot of German pills around.
I had known that
this was gonna be
Four Winds had put one out, and I'm like, yeah, I think I can find that. I did look though at a couple liquor stores for German pills and found nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that Ed was able to find one. I was pretty. I sought out to. I was trying to find a German one and just couldn't find it.
And we also might have been looking too much into the craft beer sections when we should have been looking into the.
No, I looked at the.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like with all the. Kilkenny and all that stuff. And
what's the old style Pilsner? Is that Czech still? You know when you get the cubes of old style?
Oh, that, I think that's one of those times where they just use the word Pilsner. I don't think it has anything to do with traditional
German. And then German. Pilsner Urquell is still Czech, right?
So that's the main Czech one. That's the one that's like owned by the, or used to be owned. I don't know what the ownership is like now, but it was owned by the town. And everything's oak aged there as well. I haven't been there myself, but it's going to be one of my beer pilgrimages one day is to go drink from like Keller beer style, like off the oak tanks there. Yeah.
Awesome.
I've heard good things.
I would do that just for the sake of it too. Just to say I've done that. And
you can lay down your back and just open it up.
Well, a lot of beer pilgrimages are different these days too, right? Like people make them my beer pilgrimage to Cantillon. I still want to do that, but I think going to like a traditional beer town and sampling. Yeah. And then, like that was like when I was traveling, is like just trying everywhere we went, each town just had their own like little breweries. And I was a bit younger when we were playing hockey, and the hockey teams would bring in like their milk crates of their home brews, like, or not home brews, their local breweries, just in these like 500 ml bottles. And it was just amazing. Their beer was so much different than what we could get here in Canada at the time. And this was 20 years ago.
And now we can barely find it.
I was planning on going to Cantillon later in the year. Now I feel like an idiot. Thanks.
Well, you are an idiot.
Well, yeah.
We've had... No.
Yeah. Rude.
That's it. Show over. No, we'll keep it going. You can storm out.
Yeah, you can leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian, you're next. What did you bring us for German Pilsner?
I brought the Collective Arts Four Winds collab, Air Pils the Fourth.
I think it's Hair Pils.
Yeah. Hair Pils?
Yeah.
Hair Pils.
Hair Pils?
Yeah.
Isn't that Air Pils? No?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
Anyway.
It's got
a Napoleon-looking dog painting on it. And for those people who... This is put out... at Collective Arts with collaboration of with Four Winds, correct?
Was it made at Four Winds?
No, it was made at Collective Arts.
Oh, it was made in Hamilton.
Usually when it's the branding of the initial brewery that take center stage of where it was produced.
Yep. And this can is obviously from Collective Farts.
Yeah.
This is actually a sequel. They made Four Winds made a beer. Sorry, it was actually a Pilsner again last year, with Collective Arts.
Okay.
So it's kind of a sequel to that, but made over the other side of the country.
Collective Arts is a pretty unique brewery these days. They're probably doing some of the best mass, like in essence, the best mass-produced products. They're everywhere, and they're programming.
This one's dry hopped or something.
Yeah, it smells quite different.
It's got some fruit on the nose for me for sure.
It doesn't really have a description, just says German style pills.
We had it at
It does have this.
I went to the event that they had at the Drake, and it was
pretty cool dog dressed up.
I'm getting a lot of fruit on the initial.
A lot of fruit.
No bitter. This is very fruity, and I don't mean that like in a disparaging thing. I just mean like it's like hop fruity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
funny, very mild.
Maybe they're aiming to do a new wave hop varietal of German style pills.
This almost tastes like, to me, like it was dry hop with something like from Australia or something. Like it's got that intense fruitiness, and they probably didn't even. I don't know how it was made, but.
It is quite unique, and it is well-rounded, so it is a really
I like well-made the beer. Product. Yeah.
Compared to the traditional style, it doesn't really hit those notes. But I remember the beer at the event. I really enjoyed it. Really stood out, and it also was the very first beer to blow at the event. I mean, the event was centered around the beer, but there was a lot of other Four Winds and Collective Arts beers that they had done for the event that were, I guess, a bit more flashy. That I was surprised hadn't gone quickly, and this was the one that blew first out of, you know, Drake. They had about 10 beers, I think, out of the Drake's 30, so.
Okay.
All they really say on that, I looked up on the website, it just says, Pilsner is crisp, easy drinking with a touch of malt sweetness and a subtle hoppy character. So not really too much more on, well, like the hopping, but.
So that's where I would ask, like, why call it a German style pils?
Yeah.
Right? Because if, like, I'm not getting the herbal, spicy hop notes that you would normally associate with the noble hops.
Not at all.
Like, this is more new school hops, I assume. Yeah, so.
Most of their beers are that, though. I mean, although Foreign's does stick to a bit more of a traditional style for a lot of their main brands, but.
Yeah.
Still a very nice beer.
Mm hmm. Yeah,
easy drinking.
Maybe they were going for like a new world style on
the
traditional.
You put that in the can though, right? As well, like it's not like German pils is a style that really sells itself on the description.
Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like
hot new German pils.
Yeah, a lot of people just call them hoppy pils.
Yeah,
and I think that does a better job of telling you, oh, cool, okay. So it's gonna be a pilsner, lager yeast, and all this stuff, but then it's gonna have hops.
Probably
right?
Brought up some Peebo today, but whatever.
Ooh, I do love a Peebo.
Peebo would have been good today. We could have bought a. I just yeah. Anyway, I think these are good renditions though to try. People's takes on them. This is especially these are the ones that are kind of in the market fresh right now. Also, I mean Peebo is fresh in the market right now too, but it really gives us an idea of.
Stop fucking plugging Peebo, man. Jesus.
Yeah, come on.
Just selling your wares, huh?
Peebo's great. whether I sell the beer or not, you know it's good.
Yeah, it's true. But have you had any of that Il Sauvage stuff?
Oh, God damn it.
I had this weird IPA.
Yeah.
I had, anyway.
I guess we got to make a German-style pills now.
I guess so.
Right?
Yeah.
I had, an Aslan beer that I got at the depot. Oh, sorry, at Aslan, but it was done by the Aslan depot, and it was like a cask lagered Bock, and it was quite like tart and sour. It was like 9% too.
It was a Bock.
It was in very, very. It did not come out very dark, but it was. I got it because it sounded like a really interesting rendition of the style. But they lagered it in like I think oak casks a low. Fermenting temperature.
Sounds kind of familiar, similar to the simple things from Steel. They also make complicated things, and they barrel fermented the Pilsner.
Oh yeah, so
is that around anywhere?
I know I think they only sold it at the brewery. I had it at Farmhouse Fest.
So there's a couple things like some traditional breweries do ferment in oak for Pilsners, and then I know that like Russian River and their recent expansion like added opened up fermenters for their pills.
Oh yeah. Wow.
So they're letting it
more spontaneous?
No. Just like it's not about adding wild yeast in at all. It's just about letting the lager like the open top just lets reduces some of the hydrostatic pressure on the beer, and so some people think that that lets the yeast like ferment more naturally, like it would have in the old days. Everything back in the old days would have been open fermented,
right? Yeah.
So, well, the way we ferment these days is everything's closed off, and there's like an arm that's got like a some sort of airlock on it, but that creates pressure back on the beer and also on the yeast, and so. If you want to do like a really traditional lager, you could do it this way. Or you could just barrel age it. Yeah.
Right, right.
At cold temperatures.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool that like they put in Russian River in their expansion, added all these things that didn't really like lead to a huge increase in output of beer, but like added all these things to
cool make toys.
Better beer, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what's good for breweries, too, is to take on...
It took them so long to expand as well. Mm-hmm. They've done it the right way.
Okay. So, I also brought a Four Winds German-style Pilsner. This one, though, has no collective arts on it. Oh, this just came out, like, what? A week ago?
Yeah.
They originally released it as their Oktoberfest lager.
Yeah.
And then it was just a brewery only release, and they decided to make it just like a general release.
Okay. So I'm looking at the can right now. The can, like all Four Winds stuff, has really nice branding. Really clean and modern. There's a canning date on here as well.
Oh.
It was canned on January 11th.
That's pretty fresh. So,
yeah. We got a nice fresh example of. And on the back it says Huff Gold, it's called Huff Gold, is a German-style Pilsner that utilizes specialty German ingredients to create a crisp, easy-drinking lager, Prost. So I'm guessing they used German lager yeast, German malts, and German hops. So
sweet. I've yet to have this too, so I'm really excited for this one. I've heard some pretty good comments from this from a lot of different people.
This smells much more in line with the first one.
Okay. What do you think there?
Floral and spicy on the nose to me.
Oh, yeah. Getting a little bit of the yeast. A little bit of lager yeast. By lager yeast, I mean like a touch of sulfur. Not like a huge amount. Yeah, I think overall very similar to the first one, though, with much less bitterness.
That's true.
Ooh.
It has a malty sweetness to it.
There is a big malt character, I was going to say. It comes...
Mm-hmm. It doesn't
almost
have,
not sweet, but like a long malt finish.
It has a long malt sweet finish, but it has that bitterness right at the end on the back of your palate.
Mm.
It doesn't have the front bitterness that the Yever had. But it has a lingering dry bitterness at the end.
Mm-hmm. They're claiming 25 IBUs for this one, so
claiming.
Is that all you can? That's all you can do with IBUs is claim.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Everyone, that's anyway.
No. I mean,
everyone asks, "What's the IBUs?" I don't care.
Yeah.
Like it's so different, you know. What I mean, and I think.
That's why the Cicerone program has now called it perceived bitterness.
Ah.
So like this is what I read to you was BJCP, but in like currently like in the Cicerone literature, it says like it would say like German Pilsner, it would perceived bitterness high or like medium high.
Hmm.
You know, like instead of saying and what they do is they take into account the IBU number and then like the residual sweetness and ABV of the style. Because both of those things affect it. Like, if you have a high ABV beer and a lot of residual sweetness, that covers up, like, an Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
A lot of residual sweetness, high ABV. You can put, like, 90 IBUs into an Imperial Stout and, like, barely even taste it. So.
Yeah.
So that's why they've moved it to calling it perceived bitterness, which is a better way of talking about it, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, the bitterness is perceived differently, especially with IPAs, if they're fresh or not. They have completely different, right? They have completely different
bitterness attributes. An IPA has a gradual like scale of the way it drops off. The first thing that drops out is the hop aroma. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing to go, especially the way it's stored. But then bitterness will drop over time. So if you take an Imperial Stout or a barley wine, age it for a year in a barrel, some of those IBUs are also dropping out over time.
Cool.
Nice.
Thoughts of this one?
It's a lot more crisp and maltier, malt forward than the last one.
Yeah. None of those hops or whatever that were in the last one. These are definitely noble hops. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bit sweeter than the Yeva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a bit sweeter.
Doesn't have that minerality to it.
No, and that's why I was going to say, like, overall, I hate to say it, but I think the Yeva is my favorite. Just because it had the minerality. It had the bitterness. Mm-hmm. It was clean.
It was traditional.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because I've been reading this this German Pils page all day.
When you're looking for it, too, it's like you want to get that, and then if you're other flavors you're not looking for will pop out a lot more prominent through this. So,
and I think that's why it's important to, like, what we're doing now, like, it's cool if, like, us and maybe other people do it, is, like, to grab a bunch of beers of one style or one ingredient and, like, taste them side by side, because that's the way you, like, you can read this and then drink and then kind of decide, okay, this is what it says German Pils is supposed to be. But I gravitate more towards the new school dry hopped version of the German Pils or what have you. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people probably would go for kind of like the fruitier, sweeter. Because Pilsner it's become a kind of a generic term, like you said earlier, right? Because you get American Pilsners, which are just light lagers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So mentally, and they're people more associate sweet. That. Oh, yeah.
Way more sweet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's about it for our three beer segment. We'll wrap it all up for the week. So everyone plug your stuff and then we'll get going. Mm-hmm. Brian, where can we find you?
You can find me at How I Handle My Vices on Instagram. You can also find me at Beer Can REV, which is an all Canadian beer promoting Instagram page. And I also do one with my wife called This Knit That Beer, and she's a big avid knitter, and we taste a couple beers, and we do it in collab with her project she's working on at the time. So if you're a knitting fan out there, check us out.
Cool.
And I'm on Instagram as EdK. It's K-A-Y-E. Probably should specify that. On Facebook is Bring Your Porter to the Slaughter.
What does that even mean?
I know. I don't fucking ask. I never thought I'd want to read this blog.
Oh, okay.
Never thought I'd have any friends.
And I was like, oh shit, now people are reading it. And everyone's like, what's this name of that? I'm like,
but I like it. I just mean, what is it?
So there's an Iron Maiden song, classic 80s Iron Maiden song called Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter. So I was going to bring your porter to the slaughter.
Okay.
I was kind of drunk. I thought it was funny.
Okay.
And now I've got to explain it all the time.
Yeah, but it's definitely set you above as that's you. And you're definitely known for that in the industry. So
Yeah. And you can find us on Instagram as Mashing In Podcast.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We're also on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have an Anchor site. So you can find us at anchor.com/mashing-in. And we are now available on the Google Play Store, on Pocket Casts, on the... It's not on iTunes, but the Apple version of podcast. I think it's just called Podcasts now, and a couple of other ones. So this is really cool.
Yeah.
Myself, you can find me at Socks Cover Feet on Instagram. Also, I should plug one thing coming up. I'm going to be bringing a coffee beer to Hopwired in Vancouver on February 23rd, and I'm also going to be. This is really cool, but. I guess people are liking my voice so much that I'm going to be talking more because I'm going to be talking at a, what is he calling it? Do you remember what he's calling it?
It's not like a symposium. It's like
yeah,
a conversation.
A round table. It's a round table about funky beer. Sour mm-hmm. and funky beer. Cool. With myself and then Tristan from Temporal.
Oh, nice.
And then also the guy from, I want to say, I forget. I read it the other day, but I can't remember.
It's not House of Punk, is it?
No, it's someone from Kelowna, I believe.
Kelowna?
Yeah. Wild Ambition.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I think. Okay.
Anyway, so I'm going to be speaking at that, and I'm going to bring a cool sour beer to that event. In fact, I have got them both going today, and I'm really excited because I've got two separate ones going, and I'm either going to bring one of each or I'm going to blend them. I don't know yet.
Wow. Dude, it's your first blend for the, for the new brewery.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. So, yeah, excited about that. So that just about does us. Thanks, everyone, for listening in.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you again.
Yeah.
Stick with us. We promise to get slightly better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Slightly. Just slightly in increments.
Yeah.
We're growing.
Yeah.
We're growing very much. And we're drunk.